Tonight is the final night of the Kinnis Tisha B'Av series with Rabbi Weil. Tonight's year is sponsored by Esther and Irwin Levin Brown in memory of the yahrzeit of Irwin's mother, Esther Bat
Usher.
Is Irwin here? Is Irwin here? Yeah, as was stated, the learning that we'll do this evening, God willing, should be L'Zecher Nishmas, Esther Bas Usher, Irwin Levin Brown's mother. Her yahrzeit is the Yud Gimel Av this coming week. This evening we're going to touch upon two kinnos, the 34th kinna and the 31st kinna. The 34th kinna is just a tragedy. And I think the 34th kinna, which is authored by the famous Spanish Rishon, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, it speaks to some of the issues that we deal with in today's world. Today things are not as extreme or drastic, but unfortunately, the hypocrisy that somehow we are capable as human beings, as Jews, we are capable of leading extremely hypocritical, schizophrenic lives. And we'll see what we're referring to. We think of Zechariah, you and I, we think of Zechariah as the famous Navi in the Bayesheni, the Second Temple period. The Christians on Sunday morning, if you get up and you put on the preachers, right? And they talk about the wars of Gog and Magog and with fire and brimstone. They're talking about these Armageddon and the eschatological wars. That's based upon the Nevuos from Zechariah HaNavi. We read those Haftorahs during Sukkot. That's not the Zechariah we're talking about. That famous Zechariah that we have 14 chapters of, when we finish Aleinu, we borrow the words of Zechariah HaNavi. He was a Navi from the period of the Bayesheni. Must have been not only a great Navi, but a great architect. He's the one that gave us the midos of how to build the dimensions of the second Beis HaMikdash. He was one of the mentors and leaders that ultimately shaped the second commonwealth. That's not who we're referring to. We're referring to Zechariah HaKohen, actually Zechariah Kohen Gadol. He was a Navi. He was a Kohen Gadol of the Jewish people during the period of the Bayis Rishon. There's a terrible period. A period in which a woman by the name of Atalia, who essentially had killed off most of the Davidic descendants, with the exception of a young boy by the name of Yehoash. Atalia, her method of breaking down the Jewish people, she knew if she would destroy the Beis HaMikdash, there'd be a revolt and they'd kill her. So you know what passive aggressive is? What did she do? She allowed the Mikdash to go into a state of disrepair. Imagine here the Shul B'nai Yeshurun, with all the traffic, all the activities, all the people using the institution. If we wouldn't fix it, we wouldn't take care of it, we wouldn't have a house committee, we wouldn't have a custodian, the place would fall apart, just from disrepair. That's what she allowed to happen in the period of the Beis HaMikdash. Eventually the Jewish people saw that this shrew, I mean, when Shakespeare was looking for a paradigm, a model for Lady Macbeth, he turned to Atalia. That's Atzkala. She was the one. They got rid of her. And who's left from the lineage? She killed off almost all of them. This young boy, Yehoash. Yehoash, the Navi tells us, as long as he's under the influence of Yehoyada Kohen Gadol, Yehoyada mentors him, guides him, and there's a revival. And the Jewish people reestablish the Beis HaMikdash. The famous Haftorah that we have for Shabbos Shkolim comes from that period of time. And as long as Kol Zman that Yehoyada Kohen Gadol was alive, Yehoash was as an executive, was a good leader for the Jewish people. The problem is, what happened after Yehoyada Kohen Gadol died? At that point, there were many forces, there were many influences. And Yehoash Nebuch was not under the best of influences. It's this period that Zechariah becomes Kohen Gadol. He's an extremely pious, extremely perfected Jew, a mentor, a leader of the Jewish people, who Yehoash, because he didn't grow up under his tutelage, he didn't grow up under his influence, Yehoash does not feel beholden to. And events lead to the following. The people are not interested in Zechariah's message. Message of ethics, of morality, of not being hypocrites, of a certain religious sincerity, lack of schizophrenia. And what do? Very often we do this. We deal with the symptom and we don't deal with the cause. I'll give you an example. If I have a cough or a runny nose, or I have congestion, my problem is not the runny nose, the congestion, or the cough. Those are symptoms. What's my problem? A bacterial infection, a viral infection. You have to deal with the cause, not the symptom. Well, they went after the symptom. The cause was their own flaws, their own corruption. And they tried to squelch, to suppress, and to stifle the symptom. Who was the symptom? The Navi. So you talk about hitting for the cycle? This is called sinning for the cycle. They murdered Zechariah, who was the Navi, who was the Kohen Gadol. They murdered him on Yom Kippur, that falls out on Shabbos, in the Beis HaMikdash. I repeat, they murder the Kohen Gadol, who is their Navi, on Yom Kippur, that falls out on Shabbos, in the Beis HaMikdash itself. And then, Nebuch, like what's happened this week in Bulgaria, like the news cycle. We go on, Olam Kiminhag Noeg. We're not traumatized. We don't respond the way we need to respond. We deny it, we suppress it, we squelch it, and we move forward. The news cycle must continue. And the Jewish people never came to grips with this heinous, atrocious crime. This heinous, atrocious lack of gratitude. This heinous, atrocious lack of immorality. We never came to grips with it. And it's the kind of sin that just festered and festered and festered for generations. And what happens? Open to page in the sources, 540-541. My sins doubled. It was the day of my oppression that weighed heavily upon me. My sins doubled. Because what happens when you don't address something? It grows. We know that. When we engage in a corruption, it grows and it's like a, you know, like a pus, you know, like a boil. It expands. B'shalchi yad b'dam navi. What shlichas yad? We ended up killing the prophet. B'chatz ha-mikdash Hashem, in the courtyard of the mikdash, of the temple of God. B'lo kisasasu adama. His blood was never covered up. What did Cain do when he killed Abel, when Cain killed Hevel? Tried to cover up the crime scene. Well, this is one crime scene that through providence God would have never allowed to be cleaned up. What does it mean that the blood was never concealed? The Jewish people never came to grips with this, never did tshuva for this terrible crime. Abo, until when? Cherev Monai, until the sword, meaning the army of Babylonia, came. As a consequence of this terrible sin, what was increased amongst the daughter of Yehuda, meaning the Jewish people? Taniya vaniya, quoting from Eicha. Agony and mourning. What happened? Hayaholech v'soach. This blood was like the weather outside tonight. It was a storm. Adbo Rav Tabachim. The term Rav Tabachim is a rabbinic term for who? Nebuzaradan. Nebuzaradan was the chief general. He was the Arnold Schwarzkopf. You know, he was the Colin Powell of who? Of the Babylonian army. And he was known as Rav Tabachim, the chief butcher. Why was he the chief butcher? Because of the tens of thousands of Jews that he slaughtered, that he and his troops slaughtered in the conquest of Judea and the conquest of Jerusalem. Uboyo Mikdash Hashem. On the 9th of Av, he comes into the temple. 586 before the Common Era. Umatz Adam Imroschim. And he sees this strange phenomena of boiling blood on the floor of the Beis HaMikdash. Granted, it's a hot August day, it's Tisha B'Av, but the blood shouldn't be boiling. Vayishal Levavur Zeh L'Kohanim Azochim. So he asks the Kohanim, who are working in the Mikdash. He says, what is this? Vayanuhu, and they answered him, Ein zakiim dam zvach. Oh, this must be some of the blood, you know, the fresh hot blood from one of the animals that we killed this morning. Gamu zvach latzikor. Mazev al mahaya. What did he do? He says, well, what animals do you slaughter here in the Beis HaMikdash? Bovine species, lambs, goats. This isn't goat blood. This isn't bovine, you know, cow blood. This is not lamb blood. And I said to myself, this is your sin and this is its fruit. He tried slaughtering the animals and he saw very clearly this was not similar blood. And as, like a you ever see the ocean in a storm? You see how the water, you know, huge waves? That's what happened here. He finds out that this is the blood of the Ish Elokim, the man of God, meaning the prophet, the Ish Elokim, who was killed alo chamas, not for any crime or not for any flaw or any sin that the prophet had engaged in. So gather for me the Kohanim, the people who are supposed to be responsible for this place. I am not going to be quiet. I'm not going to cease until this boiling blood, the blood of the prophet Zechariah, ceases. So he starts slaughtering one by one the Kohanim. Now, we're going to take a digression for a second. We know from Yirmiyahu Yechezkel, unfortunately, not all the Kohanim did their job of being educators. The role of a Kohen is to be primarily a mentor and educator. And unfortunately, they didn't educate the Jewish people to be ethical, moral, to be consistent, to be people of Chokmah. So they get slaughtered first and foremost, because they're responsible for the Jewish people. That's not why he did it. He did it because he took them, because they were the ones who were there. They were the ones in the temple confine. The Kar Yishishim Lemeos Bachurim Leribos. Hundreds of elders, thousands of, tens of thousands of young. Vayored the Tevach Kohanei Hashem Tzvakos. As he slaughters the Kohanim. The Tinoko Shabbos Rav, not only that, but children, school children, he starts slaughtering. The Ene Avos Ros, parents are watching their children being taken away from them, being butchered in front of their eyes. The Ein Sheket Ladam Navi. And yet the blood did not cease or desist from boiling. By Yila Mofes Hulaos, and it was a sign. The Cherev Tsar Nokemes, the Hakir Yahumiya. What happened? The city, the capital city, Yerushalayim, is a state of tremendous, it's confounded. How do they translate here? It's in an uproar. Bechol zos, even with the slaughtering of young children, lo shava po, God's anger did not desist. Meaning, it's referring to the anger of Nebuzaradan, but obviously, Nebuzaradan is reflecting the fact that the blood is still boiling on the ground. Ve'od yado netuyah, and his hand was still outstretched. Turning over to the 542, 543. The pages for those at home are from the Rabbi Soloveitchik Kinos, the OU Kinos. Hosif la'arog nashim in yom keshadayim. Now they go above and beyond those who are in the compound of the Beis HaMikdash. And they start killing women in the little suckling children that the women were nursing. V'dam ola b'nehem kiyam yor mitzrayim. Like the Nile River, rivers of blood are flowing through Yerushalayim. Adena son of Nebuzaradan einav l'shamayim, until finally Nebuzaradan turns up to heaven. Vayomer Nebuzaradan, the chief general of the Babylonian army, he turns to God. He says, "Ha'ein dai l'dam divnos Yerushalayim? Is this not enough to die from the word dayenu? Does this not suffice? Is this not enough people that has this not been a kapara, so to speak, for the corruption of the people?" That never came to grips, that never made amends for destroying their teacher, their mentor. Hachala atat osa et sheiris hashivya. Do you want that there should be a total annihilation, a total genocide of the remnant of your people? Va'al shakat dam naki v'cherev nakam rivaya. At that point, the blood stopped boiling. The blood subsided. We have a tradition before we read the last paragraph about Nebuzaradan. He was so overcome by this. He actually, the tradition has it, he does tshuva. He abandons the pagan lifestyle. He converts to Judaism. The Gemara in Gittin in Parakan Izakin says his children learned Torah in Bnei Brak. I don't mean his children, meaning his descendants. He was so traumatized by this, and the Rav mentioned, that you see, if a person, no matter how far they've gone, a person always has the potential to do tshuva, to retract, to retreat from their ways. He himself was traumatized by this. This doesn't justify. He was a butcher. He's called Rav Tabachim, the chief butcher. He slaughtered Jews upon Jews. Now, many do not take this literal. It's referring to the thousands that were killed. Children, men, women, educators, mentors that were killed in the war against Judea, in the siege of Jerusalem. Because remember, after the siege of Yerushalayim, when after 3 years they finally break through the siege, they're not going to say, "Oh, Jews, nice to meet you after 3 years. We've been on the outside, you've been on the inside. Let's sit down, we'll break bread." No, after 3 years of that war, of that siege, and the Jews throwing boulders over the walls, etc., they were going to slaughter. And they slaughtered. Who lives in Yerushalayim? There's an inordinate amount of Kohanim who are there. Percentage-wise, a huge percentage of Kohanim. And of course, they're slaughtered. So much of what is being referred to here, maybe in allegorical terms, are the thousands and tens of thousands. We have a tradition, it was, I think, 93,000 were killed in the war by the Babylonians, by Nebuzaradan and his forces. Then there's a final stanza here. L'cho chatanu Elokim. This is the Jewish people speaking. To you, God. In the term Elohim is used, meaning Midas Hadin. The Midas Hadin was employed in the destruction of the Jewish people. We have sinned against you. Havinu, not just negligent sins, but wanton sins. Vihershanu, we've done it with a sense of vicious, with a sense of evil premeditation. Haragnu Deviatha, we murdered, we executed your prophet. The Rishenu Yadanu, we were aware, we're full aware of the wicked we did. Yehi chostecha l'nachameinu, please God, extend chesed and comfort and console us. Ki mishol shivanu, we are crying out to you from the depths. Mishol is like from the depths of Gehenna, meaning we know the corruption, we know the flaws and the sickness. Umipri ma'alaleinu, it's the fruit of our corruption. Zekama savanu, how we have been satiated with the fruit of our corruption. Rachein lo ruchama, quoting Yeshaya, Hasoraniya. This afflicted, storm-tossed people is just not consolable. Rachein lo ruchama, not consolable. Einah lechotisa, her eyes to you does she lift up. Vesrascha tzofia. And we look to the distance, we yearn, we anticipate, we hope for. What? For your help, for your support. The idea here is not just that Nebuzaradan did tshuva, but through the events of the Churban, the Jewish people came to grips with their corruptions, with their flaws, and the Jewish people did tshuva. Here, you see the principle of tshuva. It's true that on Tisha B'Av, it's a day of what? It's a day of aninus. You know, we're all attending the funeral. We're reliving the destruction. We're reliving the calamity. We're reliving the death. Whether it's of the over 100,000 who were slaughtered by the Ukrainians and their Tatar mercenaries of Khmelnytsky time of 1648, 1649. Whether it's of the 6 million of the Churban Acharon of the Shoah. Whether it's the hundreds of thousands that were killed in Spain and Portugal. You know, as a function of the Inquisition in Auto de Fe. And those of them who were lost. They didn't have the ability to leave Spain. They didn't have the moral strength to give up and give their wealth up and leave. And eventually they were lost, not necessarily to being slaughtered or butchered, but what? They were lost nebuch, to assimilation. What about that close to 500,000, maybe more, that were slaughtered by the Romans in the aftermath of the Bar Kokhba revolt? The tens of thousands by the Babylonians, the thousands that were killed by the Romans in the war of 66 to 73 when the Churban Beis HaMikdash took place and the destruction of Judea. the thousands that we've lost in modern times. Israeli soldiers, victims of terror. This is now turning the theme from aninus, from just hurt and pain and agony. It's turning the theme to introspection. And particularly dealing with the issue of Churban Bayis Rishon, it's the introspection of the hypocrisy, of the moral corruption. How we could turn on one of our own the way we did and never come to grips with it. And why does it speak to us? Look at what we do. We have righteous, we have pious role models. You know, we don't like their message. Or we don't like what they're saying. So how do you deal with it? So dealing with the cause, our own corruption, our own flaws, you deal with the symptom. So thank God we don't murder our own today. But what do? We kill them a different way. We verschmutz them, right? Through Lashon Hara, through the blogs, through rumors. It's very easy to destroy anyone's reputation. You say half-truths, you quote something out of context, you put it together. You know, we think usually when it comes to corruption and manipulation, it's 60 minutes. You know, the person being interviewed will answer question A, and then when you see it on 60 minutes, that answer is being given to question B, and it makes the person look horrific and terrible. Well, it's not just Mike Wallace and Morley Safer who do that. We have the ability to do that to our own as well. That's also a way of killing people. You can kill someone physically, you can destroy their reputation. And we make short shrift of it, we justify it, we feel good, and now on to the next. And this is a day, Tisha B'Av, not only of agony and mourning, but ultimately it's a day that leads to tshuva. It's a day that leads to introspection. And that's part of the goal of any times. In the morning, not to the same degree, because in the morning it's much, the avelus is much more acute, and the, so to speak, the tshuva component is more latent. In the afternoon, the tshuva component comes to the fore to a greater degree. And this is one thing. We're now going to turn to the 31st kina. Rabbeinu Bachya, just you should know, in terms of the great philosophical works that we have, most of our great philosophical works are either pre-medieval or primarily medieval times. What was the pre-medieval? Sadia Gons and Munos Videos, right? Opinions and beliefs. The Rabbeinu Bachya, Chovas Halavavos, duties of the heart, meaning the obligations that one has, the intellectual obligations, the lave, the heart, meaning the seat of the intellect. The Rambam's Mor Nevuchim, the guide to the perplexed. These were the great medieval philosophers responding to the challenges of what? The Islamic world. The Neoplatonists in the Islamic world. The Neo-Aristotelians. Who had a way philosophically of addressing how does Islam deal with rational challenges, logical challenges. And the Jews who lived, be it in North Africa, in Andalusia, in the Fertile Crescent, which were all under the control of Islam, they had real issues. How does Judaism respond to these issues? We see how our Muslim neighbors, we see how our Muslim countrymen respond. How do we as Jews philosophically respond to these issues? And that, in that milieu, in that environment, you have the great philosophical works coming out. Chovas HaLevavos makes a fascinating statement. He says, before we get into principles of Judaism, and we all can talk about principles of Judaism, the great ethical monotheistic revolution, right? That not only that it's a rational religion, that it's a religion of chokhmah, of wisdom, but the great revolution is that a Jew is defined not only by what we think and how we pray, but how we conduct business, how we treat our fellow human being. You have other aspects of Judaism, how it brought charity to the world, the principle of tzedakah, the concept of Shabbos, that there's a creator of the universe, and it's not only a creator, but a sustainer of the universe. You have all the great principles. But what Rabbeinu Bachya in Duties of the Heart in the Kovas HaLevavo says, he says, the sine qua non, the essential principle, the foundation that defines a Jew before any of these other wonderful principles, the unity of God, you know, all of these principles are wonderful and important and crucial to Judaism. But there's one foundation underneath all of them. And that is called Hakaras HaTov, gratitude. If you want to know what a Jew is, the essence of a Jew is somebody who's profoundly grateful. Is someone who manifests a profound sense of gratitude. If you ask, what's a bumper sticker of a Jew? You know, I used to live in Beverly Hills in California. So you want to know where somebody's holding. You look at their bumper sticker. Pro-life, pro-choice. There was a Proposition 8 that pitted the Mormons, the Church of the Latter-day Saints, versus the Teachers Union. What was the issue over? The amendment of gay marriage. So the Mormons were driving against gay marriage, and it was a teachers' union that was the driving force to support gay marriage. If you wanted to know what someone held on gay marriage, just look at their bumper sticker. You'd see the Bruins, right, of UCLA, Trojans, USC, you know, it said it all. So what's a Jew's bumper sticker? Right, if you and I had to put a bumper sticker on our car that defined us, Rabbeinu Bachya would say a Jew's bumper sticker should say Hakaras HaTov. Homo gratitudinis, a grateful human being, a profoundly grateful human being. That principle is the principle of this kina, the 31st kina, that in the OU, Rabbi Soloveitchik Kinos, is page 514 and 515. And what is the principle? I wish I had a good voice. Is there anyone here who knows how to sing this kina? Because we should put it actually on the recording if someone knows the tune, how to sing it. It's one of the few kinos that we sing, and it's a beautiful, I don't mean it's not an upbeat, but the reason it's beautiful is because it's a contrast. Every first line is done in a triumphant march. Every second line is done in a dirge, in a terrible melancholy dirge. Because what does the first line say? B'tzeisi mi'Mitzrayim. When I, meaning I, the embodiment of the Jewish people, when I left Egypt. And what does the second line say of every section? B'tzeisi mi'Yerushalayim. When I left Jerusalem. You can imagine, in chains and shackles, in sackcloth, crying. It was a very, very different way. They weren't saying Hallel when they left Yerushalayim. What's the idea? What's the contrast between when I left Egypt to when I left Jerusalem? If only the Jewish people had lived with the mentality of gratitude. If only the Jewish people had had that proper humility and that sense of Hakaras HaTov, maybe we would have never been so obstinate. We would have never become so arrogant. We would have never become so insensitive that we were forced by Providence to leave Jerusalem. So let's look at the text. Eshtukad b'kirbi balosi alibi b'tzeisi mi'Mitzrayim. A fire of passion and excitement burned within me. What? When I left Egypt. Think about it. The Jews said Hallel the morning they left. They said Hallel the night in Egypt. The seventh day we said Shiras Hayam, Az Yashir Moshe. What happened when we left Jerusalem? Kinim Aira. Lamentations, we said. Laman Askira. So that I will remember B'tzeisi mi'Yerushalayim. It's interesting. Because there's two times a year that we as Jews, we don't just do things to spark our memory. It's a Zecher, right? Tefillin is a Zecher. Living in the Sukkah is a Zecher. There's two times a year we don't do things as a Zecher. We actually re-experience and we relive that event in history. The famous night, that night of destiny, Seder night, and that night and day of tragic, that infamous night and day of the 9th of Av. We relive the Churban. We relive the Shoah. We relive the Auto de Fe. We relive the terrible atrocities of Islamic anti-Semitism of the modern time and Christian anti-Semitism throughout the last two millennia. We live and we re-experience it. Now, just a 30-second digression. We mentioned this one other time in the series. I think last year we mentioned this. There's a famous story. The question is, did it happen when Napoleon was on his march to try to conquer Russia? Or did it actually happen in France per se? But the version that I was taught is that as Napoleon is leading the forces on the way to Russia, they go through a town in Belarus, a Lithuanian town, and it's a Tuesday. It's the middle of the summer, and the Jews are sitting there crying and moaning and sitting on the floor of their synagogue. And they look around. This town wasn't destroyed by the Tsar's forces. This town wasn't destroyed by the French forces. The town's intact. The economy functioning. What are they doing? It's a weekday. What are they sitting there mourning and looking all disheveled? Napoleon sends in one of the colonels who wants to know what's happening. And they describe to him, you know, it's a conversation, what this day is. It's not just a historical day. It's a day where every Jew is in Shiva. Every Jew is attending, re-experiencing, reliving the tragedies, the funerals. The Kinim Ad HaSedim, they're the eulogies. And every Jew is sitting there on the floor in Shiva. Napoleon said, and not that he was a prophet, but a very prophetic statement. He says, any people that relives their experience of Jerusalem, that Jerusalem is not a memory, but Jerusalem is a reality, that people in the end will merit, will return to Jerusalem. And how correct and how right was Napoleon Bonaparte? So that's what's happening here. Az Yashir Moshe, Shir Lo Yinoshe, right? The Shiras Moshe that we say. It's an unforgettable song. That's when I left Egypt. Why is it unforgettable? Because you saw the hand of providence, Vayikon and Yirmiyah, the non Nehiya Nehiya Betseisim Yerushalayim. What happens instead? We relive also Nebuch, unforgettable, the words of Yirmiyahu Navi, the Eicha that we read. And we sit and moan and mourn. I'm skipping a couple. Gedalah, Degan Shemayim and Mitzuri Mayim. Right? The grain from heaven, the manna. From the rock, from the flintstone, the water, the Be'er Miriam, but Seisimim Yitzrayim, the hand of providence. Lan al Merorim u'mayim hamarim. What do we have when we leave Jerusalem? Nebuch, the bitter grass and wormwood. What are mayim hamarim? It's the phrase for the mei sota, for the drink that, who's the sota? The adulterous, so to speak, the unfaithful wife. Well, using the image of Shir Shirim, we should have been the faithful wife of the Almighty, but we were the unfaithful. And because of that, we were exiled. Hashkein v'harev, Svivos harchorev. Think about what was the goal of the exodus of Egypt? Har Sinai, right? The whole idea of the Sphira being the bridge to Har Sinai. We got up and we spent time there. And we made that covenant with God. But now what are we doing? Kore el Evel. We're calling out in Nebuch. We're summoned by mourning. We're not summoned to make a covenant. Al Naros Bavo. We're sitting there on the, you know, in the concentration camps on the Kfar. The Kfar River was a tributary off of the Euphrates. And many of the concentration camps were there, where the exiles and the refugees were gathered by the Babylonian troops. And the Babylonians said, we want you to sing that beautiful choir that you had, that philharmonic in your temple. We want you to sit and sing that music. That was gorgeous. That was wonderful, fantastic music. The Levium were there. So what did they do? They literally mutilated their thumbs so they couldn't play the harps. Because how could they sit and do the philharmonic of the Beis HaMikdash sitting there in their state of mourning? Al Naros Bavel, right? The famous Psalm 137. Sham Yashavnu, that's what we sat there. Zevachu mincha v'shemen ha-mishcha, the last line, korban, korbanos, the mincha that accompanied the korbanos, the anointing oil that enabled all the kelim to function in the mishkan. So we had this gorgeous institution called the mishkan. that was a unifying force, an educational force, a place where we confronted the Almighty. We came face to face with God as a people. But Segulas Elokucha, the treasure of God was taken from us. No longer will there be a Mishkan. No longer will there be a Mikdash. Katzon Netivcha. And now who's being slaughtered? The Jewish people. Were that flock that we alluded to in the 34th Kinnah being slaughtered B'tzeisim Yerushalayim. We're turning now over the page. And 516-517. Chagim v'shabbosos u'mosim v'osos B'tzeisim Yerushalayim. You know, the holidays, Shabbos, what does it do? It commemorates that great providential that God, through a specific providence, facilitated not only our exodus, but our transformation into a people, the protection of the people, through signs and wonders. We don't observe that now. Now we observe the four fasts. We don't go to the base of Mikdash to observe the holidays. Ta'anis ve'evel, fast days and mourning, Rado Fahevel, in a life of pursuing nothing in stupidity and worthlessness. Nebuch. B'tzeisim Yerushalayim. Tovu Ohalim. What was the image of the Jewish encampment of the Jewish people? Ma Tovu Ohalecha Yaakov. What did Bilam say? Look at the beautiful educational institutions. Ma Tovu Ohalecha Yaakov. Look at the modesty and look at the dignity of the Jewish community. Arba Degolim. The four sides which all focused on what? Which all faced the Mishkan. But God was the center of their life. But now Ale Yishmaelim. We don't have beautiful homes. We don't have a focus where God is the center of our life. Nebuch is refugees. We ended up going to our Muslim cousins. At that time they weren't Muslims, they were Arab cousins. And what did they do to us? They slaughtered us. Yovel Shemitah Beret Shoketa. We could observe every seventh year the Shemitah year, every 50th year the Yovel. In what? In the economy functioned, despite that we weren't working the land, where the major sector of the economy was agriculture. But yet, the providence facilitated that we could have that. And it was a peaceful land. Now, Machar Litzmisus. Instead of everybody's real estate being returned to them at the Yovel year, it's as if it's been sold eternally. It's been over almost two millennia since Churban Beis HaMikdash. The karus lechrisus. It's like it's as if it's been cut off. It's Asim Yerushalayim. Levim v'Aronim. We had a whole educational infrastructure. Shevet Levi and Aaron and the descendants of Aaron, the Kohanim, the Shivim Zakenim and the members of the Sanhedrin. This whole educational infrastructure that transformed us into the people of Chochmah, the people of wisdom. That made us a light into the nations. We could be a mamleches kohanim to humanity. We could be the role models and mentors to humanity because we had a whole infrastructure of role models and mentors. But now who oversees us? Now who mentors us? Nogsim umonim. Oppressors and persecutors. Mokrim vakonim. People who sell us as objects, as slaves on a slave market. B'tzeisim Yerushalayim. First was Moshe Yerenu v'Aaron Yanchenu. We had Moshe, the great teacher, Aaron, the one who the Baal Chesed. So we had the great education, and we had the education of how to live. Those were our leaders. When we left Egypt. But because we sold out, because we traded in their values and what they taught us, who did we get in their stead? Nebuchadnezzar. The Adrayanus Kesar, B'tzeisim Yerushalayim. Interesting. Doesn't say Nebuchadnezzar and Vespasian. Right? Nebuchadnezzar was the Babylonian emperor during the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. Vespasian was the Roman emperor during the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. Doesn't say that. Who says? Adrianus. Hadrian. Because destruction under the hands of Hadrian, 63 years after the Churban Bayisheni, was much more severe than the destruction under Vespasian. We don't know the exact numbers. I mean, if you look in Josephus, he gives certain numbers. And it was very significant, those who died. Gamla, Yudfa, Jerusalem, many died. Sada. But it doesn't compare to the devastation that took place under the Hadrian destruction. remember, just keep in mind, I'm going back to something we talked about last year, but it's worth the digression for 2 minutes. It's not a digression. It explains what this line means. It took four Roman battalions. Let's assume that a battalion or a legion is 54,000 soldiers. It took four of those to defeat the Jews in the war of 66 through 73, with, of course, Jerusalem falling in 70. The Bar Kokhba revolt was so successful, they conquered Jerusalem. They minted their own coins. They had their own functioning government. They had to bring a crack Roman legion from Great Britain all the way across the European continent to defeat Bar Kokhba. It took nine of these battalions, nine of these legions, twice, more than twice as many as it took to defeat the Jews in the conquest of Judea and the destruction of Jerusalem. That's how successful, that's how significant the Bar Kokhba revolt was. In the aftermath of that, the crimes against humanity, the atrocities, the genocide that was perpetrated by the Romans was horrific. See, in the destruction 66 to 73, you had chronicles, the war against the Jews, you had Josephus Flavius as the official historian. In the destruction that took place in the period of what? When Hadrian defeated Bar Kokhba, the slaughter and the butchering of innocents who had nothing to do with Bar Kokhba's soldiers, it was so horrific that no one was allowed to talk about that. It was Sobibor. After the revolt, they plotted over like it never existed. Anyone who's been to Belzec, until very recently, if you didn't know better, until the memorial was put up, if you didn't know better, you'd think it's this beautiful Polish farmland. You'd never know that hundreds of thousands of Jews, my family, were gassed with carbon monoxide. In Belzec and Sobibor, they didn't use Zyklon B that killed people within 10 to 12 minutes. They gassed them to death with, it was a much more heinous death. 25, 27 minutes as they were choking to death, gasping for air. That's how they were killed in Belzec. Only now that there's a memorial, do you even know it exists? You know what happened with Treblinka? The same thing. 892,000 Jews were killed. That's the Nazi records. It might have been more. But that the Nazis recorded 892,000 Jews were killed in Treblinka. And you'd never know anything existed there. All plowed over. That's what the Romans did, not after the destruction of Judea and Jerusalem. That's what the Romans did after the Bar Kokhba revolt. They killed one-third of world Jewry. One-third of world Jewry was annihilated. Including in that group, the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva. That's why Hadrian is mentioned. Adrianus, and not who? Vespasian. Turn the page, please. We're on 518, 519. Kiddusho Nevuah, sanctity, prophecy. Kvod Hashem Nira Betzesim, the perceived presence of God. Providence is working when we left Egypt. Nigala Umara. What happened here though? Defiled, like Miguel. Polluted. Ruach Hatuma, Betzesim Yerushalayim. Rina Vishua, salvation, joy, the kind of songs that were sung. Chatzos was such a, what's a Chatzosros? That would gather the Jews to march forward as we would conquer the land of Israel. The Chatzosros that would gather the Jewish people to come and to learn Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu, Betzesim Yerushalayim. That's not the sound that was heard when we left, I'm sorry, Betzesim Yerushalayim. But what happened in its stead? Zachas Olal Na Kaschalo. The cry, the shrieking of the young child. The gasping of the corpses, facing Yerushalayim. Very different sound. Torah Usa'udo, last lines. The Torah that was given to us, Te'uda. Te'uda could be, it gets translated here as its message. Right? Te'uda, like the aid, it's the testimony of the Torah. Klei HaChemda, the precious vessels. And then we say, Sason v'simcha, v'nas yagon v'nacha. May we only have happiness once again. May the agony, the pain, the mourning, may it flee, may it leave us forever. Not b'tzeisi, but b'shuvi l'Yerushalayim. We ask as a bakash, as a petition, at the end of this kina, that ultimately we can come back, that we've learned our lesson. The various acts of chesed that God gave us, where He took us from a pagan, illiterate people and transformed us into a people of destiny. And we kicked back. We rejected that. We were ingrates. Not hakaras hatov, but kriyas tov. We rejected the good. We were ingrates. We plead to God from a position of humility, in a position of being humbled. Please, God, once again, bring us back. Bring us back to the day of great providence. Bring us back to the day when once again we can wear the crown. I'm just going back to the top of page 519. There was a time, Pare Mikvos, the special crowns and hats that the Kohanim would wear, Lechavod Mikvos, you know, is signs what? Of honor, like the king who wears the crown. But instead, Shrikos Atruos, shrieking and crying out, the Kolon Zvos, right? Cries of horror. Instead of us having, you know, the crown taken off our head, in the exile just shrieking, think about the survivors, right? The cries that they have, how many, 70 years later, and they're having nightmares in their sleep, and they're calling out and screaming, remembering the images they have of their mother being butchered, or their child, their younger sister, their younger brother being taken away. Please, God, take that away from us. Remove that from us. Enable us once again to have sason v'simcha. Vanas, it should flee yagon v'anacha. The sorrow, the pain should flee. What? Bishuvi l'Yerushalayim. And once again I should come back to Jerusalem. So this principle of Hakaras HaTov is the underlying principle of the theme of this kina, the 31st kina. Again, our learning this evening, sponsored by Erwin and Esther Levenbrown, Lezecha Nishmas, Erwin's mom, Esther Bas Asher. And we should be Zoche to return again to Yerushalayim, to once again, not only to return to Yerushalayim the way we can today, but ultimately to ascend the Temple Mount, Ganz Klal Yisrael, once again to have that rendezvous, that relationship with God Almighty, as we rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, which of course is a symptom, it's a reflection of what? Of that great providential relationship, that restoration of the great rendezvous between the Almighty and His bride, His beloved, the Jewish people. Thank you. Does anyone know how to close?
Yeah, just can I stop you first? Yeah.